Chapter 26. Tara and I walked toward the shores of Lake Michigan. There, along 49th Street, idled a big old van, its engine rattling. Its headlights came on as we approached, and the driver came out and rolled open the side door for us.
"Harry," she said. "Oh, God, what did they do to you?"
She hurried over to me, and I felt Susan's warmth against me as she slid one of my arms over her shoulder and pressed up against my side. She was wearing jeans that showed off her long legs and a dark red jacket that complemented her dark skin. Her hair was tied back into a ponytail, and it made her neck look slender and vulnerable. Susan felt soft and warmed beyond relief and smelled clean and delightfully feminine, and I found myself leaning against her. All the aches and pains that had faded into the background came throbbing back into the forefront of my awareness in comparison to her soft warmth and gentle support. I liked the way Susan felt better than the way I did.
"They beat him," Tara explained, "but they kept him alive, as I told you they might."
"Your face looks like a sack of purple potatoes," Susan said, her dark eyes studying me, the lines in her face deepening.
"You say the sweetest things," I mumbled.
They loaded me into the van where Georgia, Billy, and the other alphas were crouched. Two of the young people, a boy with blinking, watery blue eyes, and a girl with mousy brown hair, lay on their backs, gasping quietly. Clean white bandages had been wrapped around their wounds. Georgia had, evidently, been the attending medic. All of the alphas were dressed in plain, dark bathrobes rather than their birthday suits, and I felt an oddly grateful feeling toward them for it. Things were weird enough without needing to ride around in a van with a bunch of naked, somewhat geeky college students. I put my seatbelt on and noted the bruises on my hand and forearms as I did. Ugly, dark purple and brown splotches, so thickly scattered over my skin that in places I couldn't tell where one stopped and the next began. I sat down and leaned against the window, pillowing my head on my right hand.
"What are you doing with these people?" I asked Susan when she got into the driver's seat.
"Driving," she said. "I was the only one old enough to rent the van."
I winced.
"Ouch."
"Tell me about it," she said, and started the engine. "After you jumped out of the car, and I finished with my heart attack, we called the police, just like you said. Tara went to look for you and told me that the police had shown up too late and that the street wolves had taken you."
"How did that truck crash like that?"
"Bad luck. Someone made all their tires explode at the same time." Susan gave me an arch look and started up the van.
"Those bastards. Just lie still, Harry. You look like a train wreck. We gotta get you someplace quiet."
"Food," I said. "I'm starving. Tara, can you keep track of moonrise?"
"I will," she said. "The clouds are moving away. I can see the stars."
"Fantastic," I mumbled. And then I went to sleep, ignoring the jostling of the van. I didn't wake up until the smell of fried grease and charred meat made me look up at the drive-through window of the fast food burger joint. Susan paid for everything in cash, passing paper sacks to everyone. I snagged a golden paper crown from one of the bags and idly joined it into a circle and put it on my head. Susan blinked at me, then let out a brief laugh.
"I am," I intoned with an imperious narrowing of my eyes, "the Burger King."
Susan laughed again, shaking her head, and Tara gave me a serious, level gaze. I checked the status of the young people in the back of the van and found them, even the wounded ones, hungrily wolfing, no pun intended, down the food. Tara caught the direction of my glance, leaned toward me.
"Puppies," she said, as though the word should explain more than it did.